So I would like to thank all the brave people who are here at such a late time on Thursday night after 4 days of intensive conference. I'm going to speak about a class of models of extended sources coupled to BF theory, which were written by John Baez and Alejandro Perez last year, which work in arbitrary space-time dimensions. This is work, joint work with Alejandro Perez. Was that you or me? Wonderful. Thank you. Thank you very much. So I will quickly review the work by John and Alex. I'll present these models of membrane sources coupled to BF theory. Then I will say a word on a possible geometrical interpretation that we can find, possible geometrical information that we can extract from such theories and see how we can relate them to some known solutions of GR. And then I'll get into the core of what I want to say, which is basically the quantization of the dynamical sector of the theory, namely the solutions to the curvature constraint or Hamiltonian constraint and the physical inner product that we can construct. And if I have time, I don't think I will, I would like to say a word on the topological invariance of the amplitudes that we obtain via our specific regularization. So the main starting point of all this is what happens in 2 plus 1 dimensions, where the coupling of matter to gravity is crystal clear. So what we know, we have been knowing for a long time since the work of Tufte, Jack Eaves, and Deeser, that solving Einstein's equations in 2 plus 1 dimensions in the presence of a point particle tells us that space-time is flat everywhere except at the location of the particle's world lines. This is what I have written in this first equation here. So f of a is a space-time curvature here. P is the momentum of the particle, and this delta function just tells us this is non-zero along the world line. So I mean, this is not new, and this is, I think, conceptually extremely deep because we see in a transparent way the relationship between space-time curvature on the left here and matter degrees of freedom on the right, which is even clearer if one considers the integrated version of this equation, namely if one computes the autonomy of the space-time connection around the particle's world lines, we'll obtain that this autonomy equates the momentum of the particle. So in some sense, momentum of particles are just a local property of space-time. So this is not new, but it's always nice to see explicitly. So obviously this is extremely appealing, and one would like to extend these ideas to higher dimensions, namely to in 3 plus 1 dimensions. So as a first step, before coupling this to quantum gravity, it's extremely instructive, at least in my view, to couple sources to BF theory as a first step. So this is what Alex and John have done, and before that, some work by John Baez and Derek Wise and Krentz, which realized that the natural matter to couple to BF theory in D dimension is D minus three brains. So namely, it's point particles in three dimensions and one-dimensional extended objects in four dimensions, which we can call strings, even if the relationship to conventional string theory is obviously very obscure for the moment, at least. So let me say a word on the framework. So this is D-dimensional BF theory. So just choose your favorite group, G, and define the theory on the D-dimensional space-time manifold. And the theory is entirely described in terms of a couple of fields here, which are a Lie algebra valued 1 form, A, and a D-2 form B, which is also Lie algebra valued. And the action is given here by the trace on the Lie algebra, where by trace I mean any non-degenerate invariant bilinear form here on the Lie algebra of B wedge F. So this is clearly a theory of flat connections. This can be seen by varying the B field here. So then to add sources to this framework, well, the idea is to fix a D-2 dimensional world sheet or world volume, which is embedded in this space-time manifold, and consider to describe the degrees of freedom of matter, D-3 form Q, which is Lie algebra valued, and a group valued function on this world sheet. Yeah, we can note lambda here. So from this string field lambda here, we can define a momentum density field, which is actually the true momentum of the particle in three dimensions, by simply fixing a unit element in the Lie algebra and computing its image on the adjoint action of the group on the Lie algebra, and just multiplying this whole thing by a constant that we can call the tension or the mass, depending on the dimension here. So once you have constructed the momentum density this way, it's satisfied by construction the mass shell constraint, or another type of constraint in high dimensions, which is less clear, obviously, than the mass shell in 2 plus 1. So then the action is defined by this free BF part plus a coupling term here, which is given by B plus the covariant derivative of this D minus 3 form Q, the whole thing multiplied by P here, and you trace the whole thing. And this gives you, if you compute the equation of motion, exactly what you wanted, namely curvature is zero everywhere except along the world sheet of this membrane-like sources. So this is what we wanted. So the symmetries are the standard Young-Mills are defined by this standard Young-Mills gauge group and act on the field in this way. And obviously this is a topological theory, so one feature of this theory is that the gauge symmetries are just enormous, and you can see it because the gauge group is multiplied semi-directly by this group of topological or reducible transformations, which are non-compact and which make a huge set of symmetry transformations. Which means that even if there is nothing in some sense in these theories, there is a lot. Right, so obviously when you start working with these theories, two questions come to your mind. The first is, what is the physics of these variables that we have introduced, of this Q and this lambda or this P? That's the first question. So Alex gave a lot of clarifications in his talk yesterday on the interpretation of such theories in terms of matter on flat backgrounds by evaluating the action on particular flat solutions. So I won't say more about this. And the second question you can ask is, does this theory relate somehow to some known solutions of general relativity, which is possible since we have in mind the Plebansky formulation of gravity in terms of a BF part plus a constraint on the B field. So I would like to discuss a bit the second point. So namely, can we extract some geometrical information from these solutions, of these theories? So so this leads me to cosmic string solutions of general relativity. So now I'm in four dimensions here, and I have chosen my favorite group, which is an isometric group of a Lorentzian or Riemannian metric, whatever you like. And I'm noting V eta here, the vector representation space of this group. And I have chosen a basis here. So a cosmic string is an infinitely long and thin straight string, which is embedded in space-time. So let me consider a spinless cosmic string, namely has no intrinsic spin. And let me give it a mass per unit length so that I can now note tau here. So if I pick a point in my space-time manifold, x, and I choose as a basis of the tangent space over that point a basis which is associated to a local cylindrical coordinate system, which is chosen such that the string goes through the origin and it lies along the z-axis here, which I've tried to picture here, obviously removing one dimension. Well, I can solve Einstein's equations in presence of such a matter distribution. And I obtain as solutions the space-time described by this dual co-frame here, and by space-time connection, where sigma ij here is a basis basically of the algebra of pi vectors over my representation space. And so then I can compute the curvature of this connection, and you obtain something which looks very familiar to what we have seen in the previous slides. Thank you. Namely, the curvature is zero, so this is practically the flat solution to Einstein's equations, except that along the world sheet, along the ZT plane here, the curvature is distributional. So the only remark I wanted to make here is that I can obtain such solutions by considering the Palatini-Lagrangian augmented with an appropriate interaction term here. And so varying this Lagrangian would give me a set of equations of motion, which obviously contain many more solutions than just a flat one or the cosmic string solution. For instance, this is not BS theory. For instance, far away from the source, space-time is not necessarily flat. So there are many, many solutions. But among these solutions, the string solution, the cosmic string solution, exists. And the remark here is that it can be obtained by a Plebansky-like formulation, where I just write this action as a BF part plus an interaction term plus a term which constrains the B field via this Lagrange multiplier phi here to be simple, namely to be of the form odd job E wedge E. So this first part here is the action that I have defined, that Alex has defined yesterday, in a particular gauge, but this is not relevant here. And so the message here is that possibly the work that we are doing in the case of BF theory can extend to known geometrical solutions which possibly are also physical. So this gives another point of view, another argument for studying such theories, I guess. So now let me go to the quantum theory. So I'm not going to reiterate all the work that John and Alex have done. So let me just specify that this is a canonical quantization, so we choose a space-time manifold to be diffeomorphic to a three-dimensional hypersurface sigma here, times R. So the string is the intersection between the string world sheet with this canonical hypersurface, so this defines a one-dimensional curve. And basically there are two sets of constraints. The Gauss law, where you see that the string source acts as a source for torsion, and the curvature constraint, which is what we have seen before, namely everything is flat except at the location of the string source. So the quantization of the kinematics, what I mean by that is basically solving the Gauss law, and Alex and John have showed us how to do that, and the vector space of solutions to the kinematical constraints can be generated as a vector space by so-called string spin networks, which were, in fact, discovered by Thomas when he was coupling Higgs field to loop quantum gravity, and which were rediscovered by Alex and John. So what is a string spin network? It is practically an ordinary spin network, except that the graph is open, and there are a finite number of endpoints which finish on the string, as I have pictured here. So the string is the bold line here. So this is a graph, and so then what do we do? Well, as usual, along the edges, we evaluate in a given unitary irreducible representation of the symmetry group the autonomy of the connection along these edges. The novelty is that we do the same thing for the endpoints. So recall that the string field lambda was a function, so it maps a point to a group element. So we can just simply evaluate the string field at the endpoints, so namely the points which end up, on the string, and then compute this group element in a particular representation. So we also got representation associated to the endpoint, and as usual, we just put intertwining operators along all the vertices of the diagram, including the endpoints. So this is a string spin network, and this is a picture of it. So the kinematical element product can be constructed using the Ashtekali-Wandowski measure, what pieces its extension to open graphs, which basically means that to compute the kinematical inner product between two states, which are, for simplicity, assumed to be on the same graph here, we just assign a Haar integration to each edge, and also novelty a Haar integration to the endpoints. So this is how we can compute the kinematical inner product. So now, what I wanted to say is to discuss how to solve the kinematics of the dynamics of such models. So what we have done is basically to follow the ideas by Kahlo and Mike, which are to say, right, let's construct a formal map which is going to send any string spin network state, or more precisely any element of the algebra cylindrical functions, into the kernel of the curvature constraint, by defining this formal operator here, delta of C, which forces the curvature constraint to be satisfied on the state psi here. So this is formal, but the idea is extremely interesting because it automatically provides the vector space of solutions here with a pre-Hilbert space structure which is encoded in this physical inner product here. which is simply given, as you can see in the second line of this equation here, thank you, as simply just consider two states, psi 1 and psi 2, so you just say that you act with this formal operator on psi 2, you obtain a new graph, as I'm going to show, and then you compute the kinematic inner product between this new graph, this new state defined on a new graph, and these states psi 1 that you had chosen to start with. So basically the whole question of regularization of this physical inner product boils down to regularizing to give a concrete sense to this operator here, which is obviously very formal. So the first step towards this is to rewrite this delta function here as the functional integration here over the space of test 1 forms, which are also Lie algebra valued, of the complex exponent of the trace of n wedge t here. Okay, so this is exactly like delta of x is equal to integration over p of exponential I px, right? And so now the very curious fact here is that look at this exponent here and try to plug in it the curvature constraint that I have defined up here. And what you obtain is the action of three-dimensional BF theory coupled to point particles, as was written by Laurent and David Douapre. So this is pretty intriguing. So what we're saying here is that, what I summarized basically here is that computing the physical inner product between two no string spin network vacuum states in a canonical four-dimensional theory is equal to computing the path integral of three-dimensional quantum gravity coupled to point particles, obviously here from the covariant perspective. So this is what is pictured in this diagram here. Obviously, once again, I've dropped a dimension here. So computing this physical inner product yields exactly the path integral at two spin network insertions of three-dimensional quantum gravity. So this generalizes to arbitrary dimensions, and just try to remember this linear form P here, because I'm going to work with it again just before we stop, which is basically the evaluation of the physical inner product between this state psi and the no-string spin network vacuum omega here. So this is, on the one hand, intriguing, on the other hand, very useful, because we're trying to regularize this physical inner product, and we realize that it's equivalent to three-dimensional quantum gravity, coupled to point particles, and such a model has already been regularized by Fredel and Douapre. We've heard a talk about this by Elena. And so it's extremely convenient, because basically we've got all the ingredients to do the thing. So this is not exactly true. I mean, there are many subtleties that we came across here, which I'm not going to describe here because it would be too technical and it would have taken the whole time. So let me lie to you a bit and suppose that the world is very beautiful and everything is simple, and to try just to give you the idea of the way the things work. So the idea to regularize this physical inner product, we call that means making sense of this guy here. So what do? We just pick a cellular decomposition of this spatial canonical hypersurface here, which is adapted to the graph. That means the graph lives on the boundary of the two cells. And what we do, very roughly, is we impose F equals zero, so namely the alignment of the connection around the boundary of each two cell is trivial if the two cell is away from the string. And if it's traversed by the string, we force F equals P, obviously at the integrated or group level here. So, forgetting potential difficulties, the physical inner product can just be given by the limit where the refinement of this cellular decomposition, thank you, goes to zero, of the following quantity here, where the hats mean that I'm considering these guys as operators, and I'm going to just describe how I can give a concrete meaning to this, of the following expression, which is basically, if I once again take the vacuum state here, the Ponsano-Regge model of point particles coupled to three-dimensional gravity. So obviously this is not the way it works. If you just follow what I have said and try to go through the computation, you'll run into some trouble. But all the details will be in the paper, which will come out very soon. For instance, the constraints of BF theory coupled or not to strings or whatever sources are reducible in dimension superior to 3, which is due to the Bianchi identity here, which means that the component, different components of the constraint are not independent. So if you impose a null, well, you impose redundancies, and you mustn't do that. So following the duality I've discussed here, this is completely equivalent to the divergences coming out in a three-dimensional Ponzano Reggie model, which are due to the translational symmetries, due to this non-compact topological gauge symmetry I was discussing at the beginning. There are other subtleties, but I'm not going to discuss them. Just say that we can fix all that by choosing a maximal tree, for instance, which were described earlier. And just let me finish by describing how these delta functions can be given a concrete operational meaning, namely via their Peter Weil decomposition in terms of unitary irreducible representations. And each character here becomes a self-adjoint Wilson loop operator, which basically creates loops around all the two cells of this cellular complex. So we create those loops, which are going to modify the underlying graph, and then we compute the kinematical in the product, and we obtain the transition amplitudes of this theory. I know I'm finished, so just let me run a side result here, which is if you compute the zero tension limit, let me look at the theory without any matter sources, we have shown that the transition amplitudes between, for instance, a spin network which is locally given by a trivalent vertex and a spin network which is locally given by a tetrahedral graph, well, this transition amplitude yields precisely the 15J symbol of spin form models from the covariant perspective. So the side result here is that, as in three dimensions, in the case of BF theory, the canonical quantization is equivalent to the spin form one, which is sort of expected, but had never been written explicitly. So this is a side result, and I wanted to mention it. So then you just remove the regulator basically by showing that the amplitudes do only depend on the topology of this spatial manifold and of the ambient isotopy class of the graph, which means that even in the discrete level, we are already at the continuum, and no epsilon goes to zero, no spacing parameter goes to zero limit is needed. And as Alex was describing the other day, this is a model which could be qualified as non-perturbative, renormalizable, in the sense that it's free from ambiguities. So Daniel is going to cut my head off, so I'll stop. I conclude by saying that we are starting to understand the physical implications of these models, which is already a nice step, which was far from obvious to start with. We can compute explicitly the physical inner product. The transition amplitudes are topological invariants, in the sense that we define precisely. And things to do, if some of you are bored, we can have to write the covariant model. We have to wonder if we could re-express these amplitudes as Feynman diagrams of a given field theory. What would it be? Would it be a string field theory? I don't know. Some results are in progress with Itera Levine on this point here. And finally, especially add the Plebansky term to this action and try to couple this to true general relativity. And could we make contact with conventional string theory, traces of conformal invariance? I don't know. But all this to say that I reckon there are many things to be done. And thank you for your attention. I'll stop here. What do I think about it? Well, it's a way of exploring all the non-perturbative framework that we're used to use. So, I mean, obviously, maybe this is wrong, and maybe that none of all this would translate to the gravitational sector. I don't know. But I reckon that it's a good thing to start with BF and just hope very hard that some of these aspects will extend to the gravitational sector. I can't tell if it's going to work. I just hope so. That's one way of doing it. We could also, there's actions for point particles coupled to four-dimensional gravity, which were written by Balachandran and collaborators a long time ago. So maybe that's another road to explore that I'm willing to work on. But yeah, I think it's a good starting point. Will it work? I don't know.
Just a quick comment regarding the situation. Mm. Wisdom showed us that these things are solutions to the look at it today, it's pretty big support from this support. And in the signal picture, do you reckon you can just with the services? Like in I don't think it requires sort of that they can just have the group services to
yes.
Kind of 3D branch.
Yes. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah, that's a very, very crucial point. Yes, they did work with Riemann surfaces, but there are many interesting solutions which are defined on, can be defined on branch surfaces. And it's exactly what you say. Via the canonical slicing, this would lead Feynman diagrams, which are not just one-dimensional manifolds, which have got vertices. So these are the most interesting diagrams in a particle case. So maybe it's the same here. And also concerning this topic here, could we re-express these amplitudes as Feynman diagrams or some sort of quantum field theory? Well, you realize that if you want to regard these amplitudes as sort of a duality transformation of a particular Feynman diagram, if you consider solely Riemannian surfaces, it doesn't work. You can never imagine, you can never re-express this as a sort of the dual to, you can never express these amplitudes as well, you see what I mean? I'm getting tired, sorry. So you need to have branch surfaces to be able to have a sort of string field theory, even if it's not exactly that interpretation of these amplitudes. So yes, I guess they are very interesting solutions. Thank you very much.